We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime.
Well, thank you, Cleta Mitchell. Thank you for that explanation. Really interesting and kind of appalling.
Thank you,
really.
Tucker.
Cleta Mitchell is somebody with great courage, and she's involved with your litigation and lawsuits and all of this stuff. She literally gave up her whole practice not to get paid. She saw how corrupt it was, how disgusting it was, how dirty it was. And I want to thank you on behalf of everybody in this room and everybody in this country. You are a hell of a lawyer and tough. And that's what we need.
Hi, I'm Cleta Mitchell, and I'm the host of Who's Counting? This is the podcast about all things having to do with elections, election integrity, how elections are supposed to run, and how they often are not run the way they're supposed to, or the way that we think that they're supposed to, and what we as citizens can do about it. So we're very honored today to have as our guest Linda Kearns, who is an election law attorney from Philadelphia, who has been in the battle on the battlefield of election law and election challenges and election work for many years in Philadelphia. And I'm just absolutely delighted to welcome my friend, Linda Kearns, to be with us.
I'm thrilled to be here, Cleta.
So Linda, let's start with, tell our audience a little bit about your background. Where'd you grow up, and how did a nice girl like you end up as a Philadelphia election lawyer for Republicans, no less? So let's talk about that.
Sure. I grew up in the suburbs of Philadelphia, Delaware County, and I ended up living in Center City, Philadelphia, and opening my own law practice.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to Drexel University for undergrad. I went to Loyola University Chicago for law school. I went to Temple University for my master's of law, and I am currently at Westchester University pursuing a PhD.
Really? And what is your PhD?
It's in government administration, but I'm trying to concentrate it on election matters. So I'm right now in the dissertation phase. So.
Oh my gosh, what is your dissertation about?
It's about elections. I'm still refining the question. It's not easy to go from the law to the philosophical stuff they discuss in dissertations, but I'm doing my best because I'm so far in now, I can't turn back.
Well, that's pretty interesting because I don't know how you pursue a PhD when you have such a busy law practice.
Yeah, it's not easy, but.
So tell us a little about, I've known you for a long time. We've been colleagues in Republican lawyers and with the Public Interest Legal Foundation. And talk a little bit about some of the kinds of things that you do generally in your practice, and go back and talk about sort of when someone says, I'm an election lawyer, what does that mean?
Sure. So it's about 20 years ago now. I think I was in Philadelphia, and I had some type of a shirt on that referenced Republican or something about conservatism. And the chair of the GOP in Philadelphia at the time came up to me and said, well, we need women who are interested in conservative ideas to volunteer. And I became a volunteer lawyer for the Philadelphia GOP.
So you were already a lawyer at that time?
Yes, yes.
But you hadn't done any election
law?
No.
I mean, all I really knew at that time was, I live in the greatest country in the world. Neither of my grandfathers went past sixth grade. My parents didn't finish college. And the fact that I am where I am, I think, is due to America. And that's all I knew at the time. And today, I believe that elections are what keep us free. It's what keeps our liberty. And that's why I continue doing what I do.
That's fabulous. So you started as a volunteer 20 years ago.
Yes, for the Philadelphia GOP. And it was basically trial by fire. And what happens in Philadelphia, it's a city that has about there's a million voters, and what happens in Philadelphia can swing statewide elections. And I volunteered for a long time, and I think it was like 2009 or 2010. I realized that all I'm doing is fighting these things on election day. And I wrote an op-ed for the Philadelphia Inquirer at the time when they were still actually taking op-eds of. Actual, thought.
From real people.
Yeah, right. And I wrote an op-ed that I stand in election court every election, and I file suits, and I complain to the judge about the shenanigans, and nothing happens. And I remember that I saw the president judge at a function. It was in December, so it was after an election. And she said, Linda, what happens in election court stays in election court. You can't write op-eds about what happens in elections. And I've pretty much for most of my career, for the last 20 years, I've worked for myself, so I've never had to answer to anyone. And what I said to this judge was, well, as long as I'm involved, I'm going to say what I want, because there's no one to fire me. There's no one to you know, take away my livelihood. And right after that, she started having meetings with basically stakeholders to try to reform elections in Philadelphia. And what we realized was of the approximately 1,700 polling places in Philadelphia, that varies from year to year depending on the census and so forth, there weren't people from both parties in the polling places. So we, leading up to the 2016 election, it was probably like a four-year process. We really concentrated on recruiting people and getting people in the polling place for leading up to that 2016 election. And we were really proud of ourselves by the time that election rolled around, because we did have a presence in most of the polling places in Philadelphia. And I really felt like that did make a difference, because, you know, it's a famous saying, sunshine is the best disinfectant. And I really do feel that, because when people are there watching, it really controls the shenanigans.
And up until then, and then after that, there was really, there was nobody from the Republican Party in most of the precincts. Why is that? What's the problem that keeps people from being, that keeps Republicans from being able to be part of the process in Philadelphia?
Well, in Pennsylvania, you have to be a resident of the county to actually be a poll watcher. And to work on the election board, you're supposed to actually live in that precinct. And unfortunately, there are many neighborhoods in Philadelphia where there are no Republicans. And the Republican Party, unfortunately, hasn't really been that aggressive. So up until the, you know, up until we started our project leading up to the 2016 election, there was just no interest. And the Democrats thought, well, you know what? Hey, if there's not going to be the other party in here, we'll just have our people in here. And it's really unfortunate, because, and I say this about Republicans, I don't think anything should be all Republican either. I really do think that having opposition, whatever it is, Republican versus Democrat, independent versus Democrat, you know, there's the Green Party. I mean, the more, I always say the more voices, the better. Don't.
Or the more eyes, the better.
Yes, the more eyes, the more voices, the better. Like, let's get more people watching this. And then I think it keeps people honest.
You know, that's the thing that I keep coming back to, is that the law really envisions, in most states, the law envisions that there will be representatives from both parties, all parties, from the candidates, all candidates. They're designated or authorized by statute to have these representatives watching the voting. And but in so many places in America, what I've seen is that in state after state after state, that the watchers and oftentimes even the officials, the official election judges or workers, whatever they're called in that state, that you have Democrats filling the Republican slots because the Republicans have never gone out and recruited people
Absolutely.
To be part of the process. Why is that?
I get very frustrated by that. And sometimes I think that, first of all, I believe every election is important. And one of the most irritating things I hear is, this is the most important election of your lifetime. And I say, no, every election is important. Even if we're electing the guy who, you know, is in charge of collecting the trash, like that's
important. It's hugely important.
And frankly, that's usually more important to me than what happens in D.C. So, you know, I just think, and I do think Republicans are starting to learn that we have to play the long game. We have to have people there at every election, because what we noticed in Philadelphia leading up to 2016, again, it was a project that took many years, is when we first started putting Republicans in the polling places, people from the Democrat Party would say, well, you've never shown an interest.
Yeah, and what are you doing here?
Right, what are you doing here? You don't belong here. And I mean, you know, in their defense, they were sort of right. Like, what are you doing here? It's been years and we've never seen anybody, and we've been handling this fine without you. So I think that it takes people who are going to show up for every election, not just when we're electing a president, and when we're electing anybody, mayor, DA, anybody.
Local judges.
Absolutely, local judges. You know, I wrote an op-ed just last year that in 2020, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court was very active in election decisions. And those justices were elected in odd years in Pennsylvania. And generally, in those odd years when judges are elected, we usually only get anywhere from 20 to 40% turnout. So I wrote an op-ed last year that said, you know what? That 20 to 40% that showed up in 2015, 2017, and 2019, they had more influence on who got elected president in 2020 than the people who showed up in 2020. So I hope people realize that and realize, you know what, you have to participate in every election.
Well, that's very interesting because certainly those of us who are watching the Pennsylvania Supreme Court were so horrified that we could see what seemed to be just partisan decisions that were not really grounded in law, but were more, this is how we like this outcome in the election, so we're going to tailor our opinions to match our political ideology.
Right. During the 2020 election, I represented the Trump campaign, and I did see some cracks in the facade of what the Supreme Court said that year, because even though they came down on decisions that pretty much favored Biden winning, in their opinions or in their concurrences, they did mention comments like, well, this should only apply for this election, and going forward, we should require, more complete ballots and so forth. So I think they had to struggle to get to the point that they did in 2020.
Well, one of the main issues in 2020 was that for the first time, Pennsylvania had no excuse absentee or mail voting. That before, to tell everybody what the law was forever in Pennsylvania, and then what happened.
In Pennsylvania, we had, I thought, the best election laws
in
the country.
I did too.
And I used to say, like, over my dead body, will we ever get mail-in voting? And in Philadelphia has its own dedicated election court. So every election day, I would be in the election court from 6:30 a.m. to about 9 p.m., just waiting to hear, waiting to deal with issues. And one thing that started to happen, and this was years ago, is prior to our new law, we had you needed an excuse to vote by absentee. So you needed either to be ill or you needed to be out of town. You need to apply for your ballot. So what I noticed the Democrats started doing, and I think they first tried this in the first Obama election, or maybe even before that, is on election day, they would send do-gooders, workers, to the local nursing homes and hospitals. And they would get them to sign what they called emergency absentee ballots. And they would get them to sign affidavits. And if these people were in nursing homes and hospitals, I really questioned whether or not they were actually, able to sign these. And they would come into election court with these. I remember the visual, literally stacks of what they called, these people just got into the hospital and they didn't realize they were going to be in the hospital and they need to vote. I mean, this was stacks. And I remember just standing there, I'm the only Republican attorney there, thinking, what can I do? I look at the statute, which no one else looks at, and I said, well, you know what? I have the right to challenge these. So I would force a challenge one by one. So they would have stacks of hundreds of ballots. I would say, okay, let's start with number one. And I figured if I could slow this down, that's a win. And I did slow it down. And, the other attorneys would be jumping up and down and talking about suppression of the vote and so forth and all this nonsense. But that's how I used to address those issues prior to the mail-in ballot law. And watching that, watching them recruit local law students and local medical students to go to these nursing homes and hospitals to get people to sign these emergency absentee ballots. I knew that if the law was ever expanded, then they would just finish that, or expand that operation. And, I don't know if you've ever had someone, a loved one in the ICU or in the emergency room. And I recently did, and I was sitting there thinking, if someone comes in and with a ballot, I'll probably shoot them. Like, that's right. Not the time or the place to be bothering people.
Well, and I've wondered if they even actually get the person's signature or whether they just sign it for them.
Right, and that's what I would question in these hearings on election day. And then, of course, the other side would say, you're violating HIPAA laws. And I would say, well, you're the one bringing this ballot. And I have I have the right to understand if this sick person actually did sign it.
Would you even know?
Right. So they were doing that before we even had the mail-in balloting law. And then all of a sudden in 2019, no one talked about it. And all of a sudden they said, okay, now we're going to have mail-in balloting. And I remember thinking, this is going to be an unmitigated disaster. And
So what does the law say now? When they changed the law, what did they change it to say?
Well, one of my many issues with it is not only
this
did
is what they call Act 77.
Act 77.
People in Pennsylvania all talk about Act 77.
Act 77. It was enacted in 2019 to become effective in 2020 during the primary. So basically, the year before a presidential election, they decided to change the law, put this new law into effect, and it was enacted by the primary. And basically, they didn't really rewrite the entire law. They just tacked onto the old law. And they basically, we used to have excuse absentee balloting, which says you either have to be sick or out of town on business, you have to sign something. Then they changed it and said, you just can just apply for a ballot. You don't need to ask for an excuse to apply for a ballot. And it was a pretty scary time in Pennsylvania for an election law lawyer because, you know, none of this was vetted. No one kicked the tires on this. It was just all of a sudden this was the law. And it had real consequences in 2020. And I litigated a lot of cases because a lot of things in the law weren't very clear. It's very poorly drafted. And we ended up having judges, you know, ascertain what they thought the law meant. And that's
never a good way.
Never a good way.
So, but isn't there in Act 77 a requirement that if you're going to vote by absentee ballot, that you have to have your signature on the outside of the envelope and that's supposed to be matched against your voter registration?
Right. So, yeah, I litigated a lot of these cases. So the way that they did the ballots was, and this was in 2020, they've changed it since then. On the outside of the envelope, you would apply for a ballot and then you would get it back and you would receive an envelope with a sticker with your name and address on it. And then there would be lines where you were supposed to print your name, print your address, sign your name, and date it. And when you think about it, what the legislature was trying to do was, because really, why would you ask someone to print your address if it was right next to a sticker? Well, when you go in to vote in person, why do they ask you your name and ask you to sign? Because they want to make sure you are who you say you are. So when you put it on a mail-in ballot that someone's filling out at their kitchen table, you want to have some of the same procedures there. So I think the legislature's intent was, all right, well, if these people have to print their name and write their name, there's more of a chance that the person who's voting will actually do that. And but unfortunately, all the law says was you need to fill out, date, and sign your ballot. So all these ballots were coming back with no printed name, no address, sometimes not dated, sometimes not signed. And I litigated that case about what fill out, date, and sign means. And unfortunately, the courts interpreted that the signature is important and the date's important, but nothing else is important. And, you know, my concern with that is, well, number one, it's not our job to, you know, reinvent what the legislature said. I thought fill out, date, and sign means fill out, date, and sign, meaning the entire envelope. Unfortunately, here we are a couple of years later, and they even took off where you write the address.
Who said the legislature did?
No, the Secretary of State. So they took it off. So now all you have to do is sign it and date it. They're not even asking you to actually write your name down and write your address down on the outside of the envelope. So they take away anything that we challenge.
Well, didn't the Secretary of State issue some sort of a memorandum in September of 2020 about the signatures?
Right. You know what?
Tell everybody, the Secretary of State is not elected.
So, right. That's important for Pennsylvania because this is something that I say all the time. In Pennsylvania, our governor appoints the Secretary of State. And this year, 2022, we're electing a governor. And I've said many times that this election this year, everyone in America should be worried about who the governor of Pennsylvania is going to be, because the governor of Pennsylvania is going to appoint the Secretary of State. And we already know that the Secretary of State has a lot of influence over Pennsylvania elections. And Pennsylvania seems to be a swing state now. So everyone in America should be concerned about who our Secretary of State is.
So the Secretary of State, appointed by the governor, issued a memo to all the counties in September of 2020. And what did she say about?
So unfortunately, she issued a lot of memos. And a lot of times we didn't even hear about them Sometimes I would find out about them just maybe from the newspaper. It's not like I was on the mailing list. But basically, after a lot of litigation and after a lot of fighting, what happened was the ruling came down that we weren't allowed to match signatures. So the election officials were not allowed to look at the signature on a mail-in ballot and compare it to what they had on the computer. So that took away even the very little, you know, safeguard that we had. And honestly, though, and this is why I don't think mail-in ballots are a good idea. You know, I registered to vote how many years ago? 30 years ago? I'm sure my signature is very different than who it was 30 years ago. So, you know, signature matching is not always the best way to prove you are who you
say
you
are. But it was the law.
But it was the law, and it just gives you, it does, my signature still looks a little bit like it did, you know, years ago. So, yeah, that was an incredible abuse of power. And that's what we were dealing with in Pennsylvania. In addition, the legislature thought that they were enacting mail-in voting, but the way the county election boards interpreted it as early voting. So they opened all the what they called satellite election offices.
Oh, so there was nothing in the statute about starting to vote early.
Nothing. They only said they could mail you a ballot, and then you could mail it back. But the way not every county, but some counties interpreted it, and they opened what they called satellite election offices. How did they have the authority to do that? Well, the statute says that the county can open an election office that it needs to conduct business. So some counties, not every county, Philadelphia was one of them, interpreted it to mean we can just open these satellite election offices. And they publicized that you can show up at a satellite election office, request a mail-in ballot, receive a mail-in ballot, fill out a mail-in ballot, and vote a mail-in ballot and turn it back in. And they were even using this language. They were basically calling it early voting. And we were watching this in real time. And we said, hold on a second. There's no early voting. And we asked to be able to go into these satellite election offices and watch these people, you know, request a ballot, vote it, and return it. And they said, no, these are offices. You're not allowed in. Besides, it's COVID, and we don't want anyone to get sick. And I said, well, I'll send my people in hazmat suits. Like, I offer
we
that.
Just want to be able to observe.
We just want to watch. And, you know, I actually ended up voting at one of those offices because that's how I usually have to vote because I'm in election court all day. And I remember when I requested my mail-in ballot, he said to me, I'll never forget this. You're on the list, so you're going to get another ballot at your house. Just disregard that. And I remember sitting there thinking, wait a minute. There's a million voters in Philadelphia. How many extra ballots are going out? Like, this is just not a way to conduct an election. It's just not. There's too many people touching these ballots. This is not a way to conduct an election.
So tell us some of the other... Didn't you file suit about the signature situation, or somebody filed suit?
Somebody filed suit about that. That was not my lawsuit. We did have, because when I was hired by the Trump campaign, I was really hired for Philadelphia because Philadelphia is just such a problem child. But yeah, there was a suit on the signatures. I filed a suit the court to order them to allow us in the satellite election offices. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I did not win that suit.
Are the election court judges elected in Philly?
All of our judges are elected
in Pennsylvania. So it would be really kind of hard to find any Republican election
judges?
Yeah,
there's almost no Republican. The way that we elect judges in Philadelphia, and I mean, this is going to be a horror story. If you hear this, you're probably never going to want to step foot in the city. But in Philadelphia, in Pennsylvania, we elect our judges. So in Philadelphia, to get on the ballot, you need a certain amount of signatures for a judge. I think it's 1,000. So what happens is every 2 years when there's openings, people run around and get signatures. And if there's only 6 openings, well, every attorney tries to become a judge. I'm not sure I would want to be a judge in Philadelphia, but a lot of people try to do it. So then we end up with maybe 30 people on the ballot for 6 positions. But they're all on the Democrat side because no one runs on the Republican side. Why would you? There would be no Republicans to vote for you. So there's maybe six positions, 30 people on the ballot. Well, then how do you decide what order you are in the ballot?
Oh, right.
They pick a number out of a coffee can. And so of the 30 people that make it on the ballot, you go pick a number. And if you're the, usually the people with the highest numbers win because the voters don't know who these people are.
Right. So they vote for the top six,
right,
the first six on
that
list.
Yeah, so basically we pick our judges by that coffee can. And a few years ago, we actually elected a judge that if you went on the attorney discipline website, he had a disciplinary history. Like he was disciplined as a lawyer. He couldn't even hack it as a lawyer and he made it in as a judge. So yeah, I mean, look, I'm sure there are some judges in Philadelphia who are, you know, good and competent attorneys, but they're almost all registered Democrats.
That could be a little discouraging, I would think. But you do win occasionally, I guess. They would keep you going. But
I'm really one of the only people one of the only Republicans in Philadelphia that litigates these cases. So I kind of have a reputation. Oh, you know, here's Linda. But I have had some Democrat judges pull me aside and say, you know, I really like having you in my courtroom because you always, you know, you're
prepared.
Yeah.
You know the law.
You mention the statute and they don't always mention the statute. So
that pesky little statute.
Yeah. I'm always waving that around. I always have that on my person somewhere. So.
So tell us some of the things that you saw in 2020 that were most disturbing.
Yeah. I mean, I think I don't think anything could have prepared me for 2020. I've certainly dealt with everything you could deal with in Philadelphia. I mean, I think that one of the ways I met you was, and you might not even realize this, was that we had a situation in Philadelphia, and I think this was in 2012 or 2010, where these men who were calling themselves Black Panthers were standing outside a polling place. And when our cameraman went up to them and asked them what they were doing, they said, "We're guarding the polling place." So I'm in election court, they call me and they say there's these people in paramilitary outfits with bully sticks outside the polling place. So I turn to my Democrat counterpart and I say, there's people outside the polling place. Like, I think you should tell them to leave, they're your people. And I'll never forget this. He said to me, Linda, those people are Black people guarding the polling place and only Black people vote in that precinct and Black people aren't afraid of other Black people. So we're not gonna do anything about it. And I just thought, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. I would think anyone's afraid of someone with a bully stick. But anyway, that's how I met Christian Adams, who you are, you know, your colleagues with. And that's kind of how I, you know, got involved with his group and your group. So
what would you tell people about what they could do and what they should do to try to help protect elections, whether it's in Philadelphia or wherever?
We always need people, and we need transparency. We need people in the polling places. When I was hired by the Trump campaign in 2020, for whatever reason, we just didn't have enough people in Philadelphia. We did not have enough poll watchers. We did not have enough people in the polling places. And it was, you know, we were conducting an election without enough eyes on what was going on. And then for me personally, I've always been a little bit of a unicorn in Philadelphia because I'm a female, and apparently if you're a female in an urban area, you're supposed to be a left winger. Like that's kind of like the stereotype. So people always kind of, you know, say to me, and I've had people say ridiculous things to me like, "Well, you're so nice, so how could you be a Republican?" Or, you know, "I don't understand why you do what you do." It's always been tough for me in Philadelphia, but in 2020, I did have some minors. Well, I did win one lawsuit in the Trump election. I think it was the only one that was won across the country, and that was when I appealed a decision, and the appellate court judge said that we were allowed within 6 feet of all the counting, and that was a huge win. The win didn't last long because then the other side appealed it to the Supreme Court, who kind of quashed that. But What happened, and I didn't even realize this was really happening at the time because I was pretty much working like all day in my office, sleeping in my office, is they were getting my name and email address and office phone number off of my pleadings, and it was being screenshot and put out on Twitter with messages saying, "Ruin this person, you know, make her stop." And then all of a sudden I started getting, I mean, hundreds of emails and voicemails basically in an hour. And I remember sitting at my desk and my computer almost looked like a slot machine because there were so many emails coming through. And for anyone who's not a lawyer, we have what's called e-filing, which means that you get notified every time there's a filing over your email, and you can tell right away it's from the court. And I was the counsel for Trump in Pennsylvania, so every single filing for every single case was coming across my email. So I was watching my email, like it looked like a slot machine, because I would see emails from the court and then these horrible messages to me about how they were going to ruin me and using these horribly vile language. And then I had to turn off my office phone because I couldn't answer it anymore, and my receptionist couldn't answer it anymore. So my voicemails are coming through my email, and it was like nothing I ever experienced before. And I just thought, who are they? Like, I kind of imagined that it was like these lonely, desperate people still living in their parents' basement with like a single bulb, just like sitting at their computer, just like saying, I'm gonna email this person or I'm gonna call this person. But it was really, really horrible. And it would be easy to really dissuade someone from doing that type of work. And it was pretty distracting. But
well, that's, you know, that's what they've done to all of us. I got the same treatment because, of course, my involvement with the president's campaign after the election in Georgia. And I mean, thousands of emails and phone calls and very vile language, all hours of the night and day. They shut down the switchboards at the offices of my former law firm. And it was pretty amazing. I'm thinking, like you, who are these people? I mean, I don't just call random people and scream obscenities into their phone.
I never have. And I even got a lot of emails from people who identify themselves as lawyers, and they would say, I'm a lawyer and you shouldn't be filing what you're filing. And I just thought, I mean, I didn't answer any of these people, but I just thought, well, if you're a lawyer, then file a motion to intervene. Like, there's a process. Like, that's why we go to law school. You don't just pick up the phone and torture these people. But there was one lawyer that I was involved in a case where the law firm of Kirkland and Ellis was on the other side. And so, you know, this was days where my email looked like a slot machine. So I remember, I think it was like a Saturday morning. I see, you know, I'm watching all these emails. I see Kirkland and Ellis. I press stop. I say, oh, okay, this is probably about one of the cases. And I play the message, and I've never said publicly what was in the message, but it was basically an attorney that the caller ID said Kirkland and Ellis. And then I play the message, and it was a guy basically taunting me. And I listen to this message and I say, what? I don't understand. Like, you're on the other side of the case. And I called the Kirkland Ellis attorney on the other side, and I said, someone from your office is taunting me, and I think you should really like shut that down. And his first reply was, that wasn't us. You can't prove it. And I say, well, yes, I can, because my caller ID says it's your guy. And I Googled him. It took me like 3 seconds. And he said, well, we have to go through an investigation. Well, I kind of had it by that point. And in the case that I was in at the time, I filed a what's called an order to show cause. And I asked the Kirkland and Ellis be sanctioned for that.
Good for you.
And their excuse was the guy was in he was in the transactions department and he wasn't involved in the litigation, which to me, that wasn't an excuse. And I remember I was in court and I said, I don't know what kind of training they do at Kirkland and Ellis. And the judge did not sanction them. But the next day, the Secretary of State did fire them. So they lost a lot of business and a lot of fees. So
good.
Sorry.
No, that's just, well, I was pretty shocked at the number of lawyers that I heard from saying, how can you possibly be doing what you're doing? You're destroying democracy. Well, I was involved. I'm an election lawyer. You're an election lawyer. And what we were doing was gathering evidence.
Yep.
And filed a complaint under the election code of Georgia and said here, and with affidavits and evidence and saying, we have the evidence of these votes that were cast and counted in the certified totals in violation of this provision of the Georgia election code. And that's literally all. Now, it was a lot of work, but how is that destroying democracy?
Well, you know what, Clita, I think I can pretty confidently say that the people who called me didn't read what I filed, because
that
I was
true.
Filing the most, well, to me, it was exciting because I just love election law, but it was pretty boring and tedious. Like, what does fill out date and sign mean? I mean, I could talk for hours on that. Most people couldn't. Or what does it mean to be in the room while they're canvassing votes? That's the question I was asking.
What does the law require?
Right.
And yeah. What are these people doing? And does it comply with the law or not?
It was pretty much, for most people, boring stuff. But I think that all people saw was my name represents Trump, and then
that's all.
They just melt down.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that does worry me is that there has historically, and we learned this, you don't even have to be a lawyer to know this principle of American jurisprudence, which is everyone's entitled to representation. Everyone is entitled to representation. And as I was leaving the firm and all, because we just decided that was best, but somebody sent me an email saying, too bad you weren't representing Al-Qaeda. You would have gotten a promotion. And I thought, well, that's true. And we've come to this where it's okay to represent terrorists at Guantanamo or Black Lives Matter, people who burn down buildings and destroy the livelihoods of people in the inner cities. But you can't represent the President of the United States in an election challenge where there were things to challenge. There were things that were happening that were in violation of the state election laws. So that's one of the things that's very troublesome to me.
But I think it's part of the playbook, you know, scare people like me away.
Yeah.
And then, you know, people like Trump or whoever comes after him or
won't have lawyers. Right.
And it's unfortunate. I mean, and I just think it's this culture, I think, that we have that's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I want to bring this up because the news has just oversaturated, but when I heard, well, first of all, I didn't even know the Oscars were on, but then when I heard that guy hit that other guy on stage, I thought, I'm not surprised, because that's what we do now. We don't use, you know, use our words or use the legal system. We just get up and just either punch people or leave them nasty messages or, in my case, constantly threaten my life. I can't tell you how many messages I got that they said, we're going to ruin you. How many people called the people who licensed me in Pennsylvania saying, please take away her law license.
Right, right. For practicing law.
Yeah.
For practicing election law. Yeah, because they don't like the client.
Right.
And so, yeah, I've had to deal with that too. But you know, I guess the question I would come back and ask, you saw these different things in Philadelphia that were not done the way they were normally done. And you've seen the outpouring of citizen concern since then. I would say a whole movement of people who are worried about the integrity of our elections. What have you observed, and what do you say about that?
Well, I can say on a personal level, you know, I wasn't sure what to do after I went through that. And the one thing that I did do is every day since then, since November 2020, I've always worn a flag on my person. Even if it's a Saturday and I'm not leaving the house because it's 10 degrees, I still put a flag on. So that's how I get back at those people. But when I
see the bad people,
But when I see all these people really, really interested and really, really passionate, you know, I think it takes people like you and me to harness that passion. And I've been doing as much as I can, speaking to groups and saying, we need you. We need you. If I had you in 2020, maybe it would have been a little bit different. You know, get involved, vote in every election, understand who you're voting into office. Be a poll watcher, be an election board worker, you know, contact a candidate that you like and volunteer, because, you know, I think that we can change things. I think that one thing that happened when Trump was elected in 2016, I think that the next day the Democrats said, we're going to win in 2020. And they started that day. And I think the Republicans said, we won. Let's just enjoy all these riches, all these spoils of war. And that was the wrong attitude, because I say, you know, sometimes people will call me and they'll say, well, why didn't you call me back? Or why are you so busy? And I say, oh, I'm working on election law. And they say, it's February. I say, yeah, election law is 365 days a year. It's something that we have to worry about every single day.
Well, that's exactly what I've been saying to people. And, you know, we published this Citizen's Guide to Building an Election Integrity Infrastructure, because I absolutely believe that every election office in America needs a local task force of citizens. That task force is overseeing everything that happens in that county, in that city, every single day. So you cannot wait until voting starts. You've got to be prepared. You've got to be overseeing it. You've got to be knowledgeable. And we haven't done that, but I sense that now people are willing to come up and do that.
Right. I mean, I know in Pennsylvania and in all of our counties, these election boards have regular meetings and they're posted on the internet and no one shows up. You know, I think it's, you can kind of liken it to what the school board meetings were like
exactly.
prior to COVID. No one showed up. Those people did what they wanted. No one really cared. And then all of a sudden they said, hey, wait a minute. These people are making decisions that are really affecting us. And I think that we need that same spirit at these election meetings.
Absolutely.
Just sit there.
Absolutely.
And maybe, you know, when they come up with these cockamamie ideas and they look out and they say, uh-oh.
Right.
Leaders people are here. You know, maybe they'll think twice.
Well, I do think that's right. I think that, I, as a former state legislator, I know that it made a big difference when we had people in the galleries or people in the committee meetings. It just made a big difference.
It really I mean,
it didn't
I
take
think
large numbers.
That only, you always act differently when somebody's watching.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just human nature. So I think if we can harness that, and this did bring to light, you know, a lot of the problems.
Problems.
You know, but I do like to remind people that election law, it's a long game. We're not going to fix this tomorrow. We might not fix it by the next election. It's really a long game. And, you know, a lot of the lawsuits I file take years to just wind their way through the courts, and you have to be really, really patient. So it is a long game. And you know, sometimes I get a little nervous because sometimes there's some really wild stories out there, and then they just get repeated and repeated and repeated. And if they don't have a basis in truth, I think that kind of dilutes, you know, some of the work that I do. Just by way of example, I had a case in Pennsylvania in 2020 with the Public Interest Legal Foundation. We found about 20,000 dead people on the voter rolls, and we sued. Well, unfortunately, some of the more passionate people kind of turned that into, we found 20,000 dead people who voted.
Right.
And that's not the same thing. And when that happens, it kind of dilutes the work that you do. You don't need to embellish. There's no need to embellish because what's actually happening is story enough. So I think it's really important to really check your facts and check what you're putting out there.
So what is your, give us your assessment of what you think is going to happen in the future on Act 77 and the voting laws, election laws in Pennsylvania?
Well, I think we could just all give up and vote by Twitter poll. Or we could all just say, you know what, MSNBC thinks this guy should be president, so really, why go through all this,
right.
all this muss and fuss? Or we could, especially in Pennsylvania, we have a governor's race this year, elect a governor. And there's a big field, and there's some, I'm kind of watching with interest because there's people in the field who voted for Act 77 and now are running for governor saying they're going to abolish Act 77. And I think to myself, well, you have a lot of explaining to do if you want my vote. Real, a lot of explaining. Because if you voted for that and now you're running for the executive office saying that you're going to abolish it. So I think that we have to, you know, I think that we have to look at who's the governor. And I think, remember, the governor appoints the Secretary of State. Mm-hmm. I think that we have to show up for every single election. Everything, mayor, district attorney, I don't care how small your town is, every person that we hire to be in these offices can influence elections. So, I mean, my wish list is that mail-in balloting gets abolished in Pennsylvania. But I certainly know that, you know, once you enact something, it's very hard to take it away. But I am going to be hopeful because, you know, it's not the way to vote. I mean,
no.
Handing someone something so that they can fill it out at their kitchen table with God knows who's around them.
No privacy.
Influencing, no privacy. That's just not the way to vote.
Well, and what I'm worried about, too, is that it does, to me, the most vulnerable people in our society are the ones who are going to be abused the most by having these ballots, you know, getting them registered, getting these people registered, and then operatives basically voting their ballots, just like you were describing in the nursing homes and hospitals.
I mean, I've witnessed it in Philadelphia in that I've seen I don't spend a lot of time in polling places because I'm usually in election court, but I've been to polling places where I walk into a polling place with a valid poll watcher certificate. I don't just walk in because I feel I should. And I remember walking in and seeing eight legs in one voting booth. And I'm thinking, why are eight legs in one voting booth? Like that just doesn't even.
That's not legal.
Right. So I already see it, you know, see it happening. And so, you know, And imagine if your husband is standing over you saying, vote for this person, or your wife is standing over you, or your brother, or whoever lives in
your
house.
Or your union
with you.
Boss.
Yeah, yeah. It's just...
It's not
and
right.
And just the chain of custody issue. Where are these ballots going? It's just not the way to conduct an election.
No, and we worked hard over the 20th century to create election administration that did protect the privacy and the secret ballot, and took away a lot of the potential for the influences that the ward healers and all had for so long. And now there's just this big push by the left to make it all, to take a lot of those administrative protections away. And I think we have to stand up and say, no, that's not right. And I've been encouraged by the polling data that 80% of the American people think there should be photo ID attached to any ballot, whether you're voting in person, if you're voting by mail, a photo ID.
Even when I really sit down and talk to people, even if they're very progressive and don't believe what I believe on a lot of the issues, when I tell them like how I think an election should be, they say, well, that sounds right.
Right.
That sounds correct. But that's not always the message that you're getting.
No. It's the 20%, the elitists that, you know, sort of run the media and all. They're the 20% who don't agree with us on these basic things. But the rest of the people, they agree with us.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Linda, you have done yeoman work in this field for so long. I really admire you. I admire your courage. I'm sorry you had to go through what you had to go through in 2020. But I just figured that we're both stronger for it. And, you know, it sort of opened my eyes to some really bad people in our society. But fortunately.
Yeah, I mean, so far they haven't scared me away. I've filed suits since then. I'm still here. I'm still representing clients in election law matters. So they haven't scared me away yet.
Well, Linda, you're terrific. Thank you for spending this time with us on our podcast. And thanks to all of our audience for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. Be sure to share it with your friends. And just remember, it's up to all of us to be able to save our election system. So we're counting on you to get involved. Visit our website, www.whoscounting.us. And with that, we'll say goodbye and we'll see you next time. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Who's Counting. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is filmed and recorded at CPI Studios in Washington, D.C. Help us grow this show by sharing this episode with a friend, and be sure to subscribe and to give us a good review. We need your word of mouth because big tech can't be trusted and tries to cancel us daily. Help fight back by visiting whoscounting.us and sign up for this podcast, for our newsletter, become part of the Election Integrity Network.